Welcome to the Prescription for Admission podcast, where we talk about hospitals and hospital-based care, who you can expect to meet, and what you may experience during your time in the hospital, both as a patient and also as a healthcare provider working in a hospital. My name is Dr. Monique Nugent. I am a practicing hospitalist and also the author of Prescription for Admission, the book, where I talk about many of the same topics. Thank you for joining me and enjoy the show. Hi, and welcome to the Prescription for Admission podcast. I am Dr. Monique Nugent, your hospitalist and host, and going to be talking about all things hospital, hospital-based, patient experiences, physicians and providers' experiences, and here to really teach you how you and your family and loved ones can navigate the hospital system and the healthcare system. I am thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Scott Brizard. He is a pharmacist, a very, very talented and very impressive pharmacist who's going to spend some time explaining to us the role of your pharmacist in your hospital stay. Dr. Brizard, thank you so much for being here and thank you so much for spending your time to educate us.
Thank you, Dr. Nugent. I am thrilled to be here. Thank you for the invitation to speak with you and your audience about their stay at the hospital. And hopefully we'll get some things cleared out for them in regards to their hospital stay and to what extent the pharmacy is involved. The pharmacy is definitely involved from the beginning of your entry into the hospital all the way until you leave the hospital.
So tell us, Scott, pharmacists are not seen usually in the hospital stay.
Yeah.
I will say that I don't think a patient is often calling for their pharmacist, but the physicians are. Right.
Yes,
and so if you were to explain to patients and their family members your role in their experience in the hospital, their safety, because pharmacists play such a huge role in the safety of patients in the hospital, quality, all of these things, how would you explain your role?
So in regards to safety at the hospital, from the moment that the patient comes into the hospital, like I mentioned before, the pharmacy is definitely involved. In fact, without the pharmacist or pharmacy operations, you do not have access to your medications that you'll be taking at the hospital, whether it's an IV infusion or a medication by mouth or medication that's topical, that's a cream or an ointment and et cetera. So we take care of everything like that, as well as we also pay very close attention to the patient and the diagnosis and the reasons why they are there. The patient comes in with a problem. We read, we learn about the problems and et cetera. And like you mentioned, the patient comes into the hospital. They never really ask for the pharmacist because we are always there no matter what, right? Yeah. But the doctors do, the physicians do, the nurse practitioners, the physician assistant. But we do get a lot of calls from the nurses, since the nurses are the ones that are often spend the most time with the patients. If they have any questions about the medication, about the drug, how it is given, how much to wait before giving the next medication, or if the patient comes in with medications from home, such as dietary supplements or other type of vitamin supplements, and how that would affect the medication that the patient is currently getting or affect their disease state. So these are questions that we answer all the time. So the way I think about it is that the pharmacist, although not seen, but we are definitely there, very similar to when you're watching a show or a movie, you have the actors and the actresses that you see, and then you have the production team in the background, such as the directors, the executive producers, and et cetera, that make sure everything goes smoothly and goes well.
I like that. You're the executive producers because I like that because the truth is that from being a resident, a baby doc, I learned to really depend on the expertise of the pharmacist to, you know, not only say like, is this dosage correct, but particularly because medications in the hospital change so much with what you said, disease state. Right? Mm-hmm. Kidney function fluctuates and goes up and down, and that changes how we're changing dosing of medication, or even if a medication is really acceptable for a patient to continue getting, right? And so those things I have definitely learned to depend on our pharmacist. Something that I get a lot from patients is, what is the formulary? Because I'll often say to a patient, you know, we don't have that medication. And they're like, what do you mean you don't have them? Your hospital. You're supposed to have all the medications in the world. I say, well, that's not on our formulary.
Yes.
I think this is a great time to address two questions. What is a formulary? Uh-huh. And then people often say, why can't I take my own medicine? Or, you know, why are you asking me to bring in my own medicine? So I think those are questions that I get, and let's see if we can dive into that.
Sure. Before I dive into that, those last two questions that you asked regarding the formulary, why don't you have it, and why do I have to bring my own medication, etc. These are questions that we get all the time. I remember when I was in high school, I went to a Burger King, right? The name is Burger King, right?
Yeah.
And I ordered a cheeseburger, and the response was, I'm sorry, we are out of burgers right now. And my response was,
your burger game.
Response was, what? How can you be out of burgers right now when you are the Burger King?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes things happen and you do run out of supplies and you have to quickly gather supplies from other places and stuff like that. And, you know, within 30 minutes to an hour, I'm pretty sure that Burger King got what they needed. But I didn't sit to find out. I just went to the next Burger King or the next McDonald's that I could find.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does happen. And sometimes you just run out of stuff, and sometimes something, you just don't carry it for particular reasons, which we'll get into more as we talk. But in regards to the first thing that you had asked about was regarding medication safety and mm-hmm. when the patient comes into the hospital, which also ties into the formulary question that you just asked. So the pharmacist is very, not just the pharmacist, but pharmacy in general, as well as the nurses and the medical providers in general, are there for medication safety.
Yeah.
And one critical role that the pharmacy plays in terms of medication safety is the very first time the patient is admitted into the hospital, or not even admitted, but just in the ED, in the emergency department. And a few questions are asked of the patient. Now, if you're a patient who goes to a hospital that's lucky enough to have a pharmacist in the ED, I've worked in that position before, then you get asked the questions about your medication list, what meds do you take at home, and do you have any drug allergies? So those are surface level questions. But when the pharmacist comes in and asks you the same questions, unfortunately, I remember before I came into the healthcare field, I would go to the hospital with my kin, with my family members, and I felt like the same questions were asked for five times. Now that I work in the same field as a pharmacist, I understand why, because each person that comes in and asks the same question, their approach and their response to your answer is different, and sometimes the responses vary or changes over time because people remember things as they go. Right?
Yes,
they don't remember everything immediately that you ask them. You might ask them a question right now, and they answer the question to the best of their knowledge. And then 10 minutes later, they give you the same response with additional information, with additional medications, probably because in between that time, they were stressed, or in between that time, they made a phone call and learned more, got more information from the family members to mention this, to mention X, Y, Z, and et cetera. So things do change over time. Things may change over time. And it's better that you are asked questions more often than no questions being asked at all. And so that's where the medication safety comes in. It's very important. When the pharmacist comes in and asks a question about one thing that's mentioned in your book is medication reconciliation, which is
my favorite.
What medications are you taking?
Yes.
Whenever a question like that is asked, most patients will give a list of prescription medications, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm taking lisinopril or atorvastatin and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because those are considered medications. But a lot of times some people don't think about other stuff that they take at home that they take on a regular basis, like vitamins, a particular cream or lotion. I know patients who use bacitracin all the time. Which is not good because whenever they get a cut, they use it. Whenever there's a little bit of scrapes, they use it, and et cetera. So these informations are good to know. Some patients take vitamin supplements or supplements from other countries that we are not very familiar with. And sometimes they take medications from other countries that's very similar to our drug, but carries a different name. Mm-hmm. And so we need to know these information. And when we ask questions, like, for example, I've worked mostly in the Boston area, which is a very diverse community, which has a pretty decent immigration population from various backgrounds. Yeah. And sometimes people come to this country to visit. They come to visit the family for the holidays. We just had Christmas recently. And they bring their own meds. If they're from the DR or if they're from somewhere in South America or if they come from Haiti and et cetera, that medication might carry a different name in a different country, but it's the same medication. And so we need to know that name, what class of drugs it falls under. And since we cannot replace the exact same drug with the exact same name, but we do have something that's just like it to replace it. And sometimes we don't want to double dose the patient with their medication and the medication that's available in the hospital. That's where the medication safety comes in.
Yeah.
Such as medications that may cause confusion, medication that has extensive workload on your kidneys, on your liver, and et cetera. So we ask these questions just to make sure that we are all on the same page and we may get asked this question again. Yeah. The other question that's very important that the pharmacist asks is, what are your drug allergies, right? What are you allergic to? And so a lot of times, sometimes patients will respond and give a few allergies that are not medication related. They are environmental related. And some medications that they mention, what is thought to be an allergy is not a real allergy. It could be just be the adverse effect of the medication or a side effect of the medication because it did not make them feel well. Like, for example, ibuprofen. Some patient might say, I'm allergic to ibuprofen, right?
Hurts my stomach.
Exactly, because it doesn't make me feel good with my stomach and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That may be placed on the patient's record, but we as pharmacists come to them and say, no, that's not an actual allergy. It's an adverse reaction. It's a side effect of the drug. And we try to explain to the patient it's a side effect, and here are ways to mitigate that side effect so you don't feel it the same way next time you take it, that it's safe to take. It's not a danger to your health. And allergies that are hives, small hives, or itchy, these type of allergies are not very, it's not one that we pay very strong attention to, because these allergies, especially if it's a drug that you need to take, these allergies can be mitigated with other medication to reduce the hive, to reduce the itchiness that you are feeling. Unless the allergy is hives all over your body or anaphylaxis where there's swelling in your throat or swelling all around your body and et cetera, it's not a drug that we take off the table per se. If there are other alternatives for you not to have a hive reaction or itchiness reaction, we'll go with another drug. But if it's a medication that's necessary, medically necessary, as you mentioned in your book, then we'll go ahead with that, with supplementals to help reduce that side effect that you're feeling.
That's a really good point, the discussion around adverse effects versus a true allergy, because there will be things there. Oftentimes you find patients with really long allergy lists. They'll have like 22 medications on their allergy list. Mm-hmm. And that can tie our hands as to what we can prescribe. And so I do spend some time saying, what is the thing that happened that you said was an allergy? And discussing an adverse effect, which is no less true. Mm-hmm. And this is what I tell people all the time. I'm like, yes, it is true. It made you feel bad. It hurt your stomach. It caused diarrhea. It gave you a headache. I'm not saying that's not true at all, but that is not an allergy. Mm-hmm. And we may need to use this medication, you know, and figure out a way to help you be comfortable during that time.
Yes.
That hopefully it's not a forever medicine, right? Mm-hmm. It's like an antibiotic, maybe 7 days. And how can we get you through the 7 days if this is what you need?
Yes.
So that's a really great point that you brought up.
Yeah. In regards to that, just to finish it up real quick before we go to the formulary, as we enter into the formularies, is penicillin allergy is often a mislabeled allergy a lot. Yeah. And unfortunately, when I was in pharmacy school, I did a year-round research project to be presented and published regarding the labeling penicillin allergies. Mm-hmm. And what it was found out is that about 80% of the patients who report a penicillin allergy doesn't actually have a penicillin allergy. And one thing about penicillin allergies is that once you are labeled to have a penicillin allergy, it takes everything penicillin derivative off the table, such as amoxicillin, like many of the other penicillin derivative medications. And so since penicillin derivatives and penicillin is a very effective medication for a lot of different types of infections, and it's also, from a pharmacy perspective, it's very, very, very cheap. It's like the most cost-effective way to treat many disease states, many disease infections. But once you take that off the table, saying you have a penicillin allergy, it narrows what the pharmacy and the medical team can do in terms of treating that infection, going to more broader spectrum antibiotics versus using a penicillin. And what it has been found is that a lot of patients don't really have that allergy, and they may have had the allergy as a child, but grew out of it. And majority of people grow out of the allergy, but because they had it since then, when I ask a question, oh, my mom said I had a bad reaction to it, but it's hard to describe what the reaction was. Was it hives or was it itchiness? Nobody knows, but for safety purpose, since we don't know the full information, we keep that penicillin allergy on there. And one thing that some hospitals are doing in terms of penicillin delabeling, allergy delabeling, is doing test doses to find out if the patient is fine. If the patient is fine after taking the penicillin or the penicillin derivative, then we take that label off that they have penicillin allergy and things like that. So that's one thing that I would advise a lot of patients to do.
Yeah.
Is, you know, get some more information about the allergy that was said that you had as you were a child. What was the reaction? What was the response? And et cetera. So that when you come to the hospital, you are more informed. And when you are more informed, your team is more informed on how to take care of you.
Yes. Information is safety, is what I tell people.
Indeed.
In the hospital, information is safety. And own that information so that you are the driver of your care. So you brought up price. And I think this is a good segue into that question about formulary, because we don't really, in the hospital, I don't think people think about the price of the medication that they're being prescribed, that they're taking this IV antibiotic, they're taking pain medications, they're taking antiemetics, which are anti-nausea medicines, and some of them are significantly more expensive, right? So like IV Tylenol versus PO Tylenol.
Yes.
Versus Tylenol pill. Is there a price difference there?
Oh, indeed.
Indeed. Right? They're both Tylenol. People don't think about that. But I've not been allowed to prescribe IV Tylenol without clearance of a pharmacist for essentially my entire career. Essentially my entire career. I have not been allowed because that medication is so expensive, right?
Yes.
So that does play into the formulary. So let's talk about what is the formulary? And how do we get a formulary at a hospital?
The formulary is, so excuse me, I like to give real life experiences.
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Yep, when I'm explaining medical stuff.
Yeah.
The formulary is kind of like your corner store versus the supermarket that 4 or 5 blocks away, right? Okay. Your corner store carries certain things for that community. And it will not carry everything that you need, right? Say, for example, if you want a dishwashing soap, you might not get all of the brands, but you will still get, but you will have access to a dishwashing soap, which will do the job of washing dishes, right?
Right.
It's the same thing. You may not see all of the types of sponges that you're looking for, but there's sponges. And what do sponges do? They clean dishes, right?
Yeah.
So this is a cost-effective way for the store to provide that community what it needs without spending too much money based on what it can afford. Mm-hmm. So hospitals will have medications on their formulary. So think about when you walk into a store, whatever you see in that store is that store's formulary. When they run out, they replace it with the same brand. Or if they can find a more cost-effective brand, then they will go with that.
So the because, things that are most used in that community.
Exactly.
The things that you know this community uses.
Will need, exactly. Will need. Mm-hmm. And when you try and find the most cost-effective product for that community, it also reduces the cost that community pays for the product. Okay. So in a way, a formulary is there not only to reduce the hospital cost, but it also reduces the patient cost as well. So for example, you go to, let's say for example, a patient has been taking medication for acid reflux all their life. They've been taking over-the-counter omeprazole, right? And without it, they have really bad acid reflux. And so they go to the hospital, and the hospital changes it to pantoprazole. Mm-hmm. It's just like going to that corner store from your house that has what you're looking for to do the job that you need to do. Another reason why a hospital will have certain medications on their formulary and not others is not just because of costs. It's also because of interactions with other medications, right? Okay. So we're talking about acid reflux, we're talking about omeprazole. There are many other medications that falls in that same category of drugs, drug classes, as we call them. They're known as PPIs. So there's omeprazole, there's esomeprazole, and there's pantoprazole, just to name the three popular ones, right?
Yeah.
So the first two that I mentioned have various drug-drug interactions with other medications. Pantoprazole has the least drug-drug interaction. And so because of that, the hospital, the pharmacy operations might decide to choose that medication instead of having all three available, or instead of having omeprazole or esomeprazole. So there are various reasons why the hospital formulary goes into play. Mm-hmm. It's as we're talking about earlier, we're talking about safety. So it could be because of safety, right? So if there's less options to choose from, esomeprazole, omeprazole, pantoprazole, and you just have pantoprazole to choose from, not only are you reducing the cost, but you're also increasing safety at the same time. Okay. So there are many different reasons why there's a hospital formulary besides cost, safety, and various other things that goes into it. So a hospital may not have the drug that you're looking for, but they do have something that does the same job, just like that corner store does.
So something that I have a few family members that are pharmacists, and something to talk about is how often a medication is used, right? So if this is not a medicine that's very popular, and I shouldn't say popular, that isn't needed often, someone has a really specific disease process and is using a really specific medication, that may be another reason why it's not on the formulary. It's because this type of thing doesn't walk into the door often. And this may be a time where we say to someone, can someone bring that medicine from home?
Correct.
Right. And so when I say that to patients, most of the times, if they're on these really specific medicines, they're used to that, right? They're kind of like, oh yeah, I know, you know, so I always bring that with me.
Right.
But on the other end, what sometimes I get are people who bring all of their medicines from home and want to take those. And I'll say like, oh no, you know, we have your pantoprazole. We have your metoprolol. We will give you those. And they will say, no, I want to take mine. And I say, well, no, we can't let you do that. It's for safety reasons. And I think particularly now with the discussion around healthcare costs, people think that if I come with my own medication from home, maybe I won't incur this cost.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just explain a bit as to why we don't allow you to take your medicine from home if we have that medicine? And also, can we get you a medicine that maybe we don't immediately have?
Yeah, sure. I can try to answer that question. I come across that question very often. And so just a brief background about myself, right? So currently I hold a position in oncology pharmacy. And majority of my patients are patients who has cancer or patients who had recently had transplant and things like that. Prior to that, I worked in rehab space, so acute care rehab, and as well as long-term care rehab. And so a lot of times patients go into the rehab space, they often like to bring their own medications for the reasons that you just mentioned, to either reduce costs. Sometimes it's not even to reduce costs. Sometimes it's just a level of comfort, like because it's my drug, so I know what I'm getting, that I'm getting my drugs and things like that. So sometimes that's the reason. And in some spaces, they will allow them to take certain medications that the patient want, but other medications that's very easily accessible and is very, very inexpensive in terms of how much it's going to affect your hospital stay cost. Mm-hmm. It's very small. And when we're talking about hospital, we're talking about like in the cents, like cents, like C-E-N-T-S, cents, not dollars, but cents cost. And so it has a very small impact on your overall cost of medication. Just like you mentioned earlier, IV Tylenol versus by mouth Tylenol. There's a big difference in there in terms of cost. But we do not allow, or we suggest not to use your own medication for a few reasons, right? I myself, as a pharmacist, get these calls all the time. We have a patient here with these medications, and can you please identify them? Now, sometimes the medications are very neatly packaged and in separate bottles, and sometimes all of them are in the same bottle.
Yes.
Because the patient knows the medication and they've been taking it for a very long time. So they kind of know which medication is which and et cetera. But we have to identify them. And then we have to make sure that it's safe. What we don't know about the medication is that we might be able to identify them. Let's say that's right there is acetaminophen. That right there is ibuprofen. That right there is Xarelto. Okay. We've identified it. We know that it is what it is. What we don't know is, how was it taken care of before it came to the hospital? Mm-hmm. Was it stored in a safe place? How long have you had it? Has it expired? Is it still effective? What has happened to it since then? So there's too many unknowns. But what we do know is that the medication that's at the hospital, we know when we bought them, we know what they are, we know when they expire, we know everything about them. And so in terms of safety purposes, it's the more safe approach to taking care of you. You want to be safe, and you want us to know that we are confident in your safety. And the only way for us to know to be confident in your safety is that we have all the information that we're looking for, which are the ones that I just mentioned, that storage, how long you've had it, expiration dates, and et cetera. Mm-hmm. Without these informations, it's hard for us to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very, very good point. So you are a specialist, and I don't think people realize that pharmacists specialize in the work that they do. You mentioned already a really specific role in emergency medicine. So I know that when I was a resident, there were resident pharmacists who were training, and mm-hmm. one of my friends was training to be an emergency medicine pharmacist. And you mentioned that you specialize in oncology. Tell us a little bit about the career path of a pharmacist, and how do you grow into that career?
So in addition to what I mentioned before regarding my background in the hospital pharmacy side, I've also worked as a community pharmacist. In fact, that's what made me want to enter into pharmacy school and into the pharmaceutical care field was that. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I worked in research, doing research on medications, as a matter of fact, and how they have an effect on different disease states. And while I'm in research, I'm like, wait a minute. There are some things going on with some of these medications that I'm seeing in research. How informed are people about these side effects? Or side effects that may not be occurring right now, but may occur in the future from prolonged administration of the medication, right? So I remember going to pick up some medications for my mother, and she was taking a medication that is not very effective for her. There are other medications that could have been more effective, but I kept going there not knowing anything about that until I learned about it. And I said to myself, I think I should go into pharmacy so that I can inform people better about their medications. And so now, when I work in the community pharmacy setting, I make sure that I speak to people about the medications, if I get a chance to speak to them, I ask them, hey, how's your medication? How have you been feeling? Do you know XYZ about this? Because these are some side effects. Have you seen them? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? So that was my entry into pharmacy, was to work with the community and inform the community about their medication, especially in the community that I live in, the greater Boston area. And while in pharmacy school, I'm learning more about pharmacy and the different roles pharmacists play. And it came to my knowledge that the color of the drugs that you take and how they are packaged is informed by pharmacists from the industry perspective. Say whatever company, let's say GSK, is manufacturing a medication. They have pharmacists, medical doctors, and other specialists on there to make sure that there's a lot of safety approaches in place, efficacy, and et cetera. And sometimes of they have a pharmacist on that team that'll tell, hey, from a pharmacy perspective, that color doesn't look very good. Patient might not take it. That smell is abhorrent to patients, and they will not take it, and et cetera. And so pharmacists, I've learned, is involved from the conception all the way till the drug makes its way into your body, or if it's topical, on your skin, and et cetera. And along the ways, I've learned that there's many different roles that pharmacists play, and there are pharmacy specialties like yourself. You said that you were during your residency, and just like medical doctors do fellowships, pharmacies do specialty educations. Now, I myself am not yet a specialist in oncology. I work in a specialty of oncology. I need to work in this field for a number of years before I can sit for my board and be board certified oncology pharmacist. It's the same thing for emergency medicine. That pharmacist, in order for that pharmacist to become a board certified emergency pharmacist, they have to sit for an exam, answer some relevant questions that specific to that specialty, and et cetera. So there are whatever type of disease states that you can think that exist, there's a space for pharmacy to be involved in that. Like, for example, I work in oncology and transplant. I'm not a board certified oncology pharmacist, nor am I a board certified transplant pharmacy. But we do have these individuals on our team. If I have any questions that are specific that I can't get the answer to, those will be the expert that I look to
Dealing to.
for answers.
Yeah. And so you grow into that, you do it for a number of years, and then you get board certified, and it becomes your specialty,
Yes, exactly.
kind of thing.
It becomes my specialty. And one of the reasons why I came into this field is because infectious disease is something that's very close to me. That by close to me, meaning that's something that I want to get into. And a good way to take care of infectious disease is also in oncology, since many patients with cancer tend to develop infectious diseases because of the cancer or because of the drug that they are taking that reduces their immune response, which makes them more susceptible to develop a simple infection that may be life-threatening. And so being in this field takes care of both at the same time.
So, if you could give patients, their family members, or advocates, two tips from a pharmacist on how to maximize your impact on their care, right? What would those two things be? To say, like, hey, this is, if you're able to do this, or you're able to give us this information, this will help the pharmacist make sure that your stay is safer, more effective, more timely, things like that. What would be your two tips for patients and their family members?
That's a very good question with a very simple answer, which we already discussed, right?
You're going to say my favorite thing. I'm waiting
Yes.
for it.
So now the pharmacist is the drug expert. So everything that we do surrounds drugs, right? The medication that you are taking, whether it's an IV, something that you put on the skin, on your scalp, or something that you take by mouth, or something that you inject. In fact, even the food that you eat is also in the pharmaceutical realm, and stuff like that, because some food affect the way your
Medicines work,
medication
right?
is metabolized. Exactly. And this brings to mind a patient recently is taking warfarin, and the pharmacy is in charge of dosing the warfarin and things like that.
So warfarin is a blood thinner.
Blood, yeah, exactly.
And it goes by another name as Coumadin.
Coumadin, correct, yeah. Correct. And, well, patient has been in the hospital for a while. When you are bedridden, your gastrointestinal tract motility is reduced. It doesn't function the same way. And so what often a lot of providers will do is they will introduce a medication to help the patient go to the bathroom, right? Either a stool softener, or sometimes they will add Miralax in the mix and things like that. You know, a fiber supplement or something like that, right? And what that does is that although it helps the patient go, what it does is it impacts the way that the warfarin, the Coumadin, is absorbed into your body, which will cause your INR to fluctuate, which is how we measure how well the warfarin
is working.
Yeah. Exactly. So I gave that example to show that whatever it is that you are taking at home, it's hard for me to say, you can never give us too much information.
Mm-hmm.
But as a pharmacist who is the drug expert, whatever information that you can give us about your disease state, what you've experienced in the past, what has worked for you, what has not worked for you, why was it changed? First of all, let's start with one, right? Let's start with one.
Okay, one.
We talked about it already. Your medication list.
Know your medication.
So your current medication list.
So what I tell patients is know your medication list or where to get that information.
Right? Exactly.
That information can be hard to remember all of the words and all of the doses, but where can we get that information? You know, do you go to the same CVS all the time that has that updated list? And I like what you said, current, because medicines change, right? You go to see your cardiologist and they may change your dose of your Lasix, which is a diuretic, a water pill, people call it, right? So the pharmacist may have it listed as 20 milligrams, but you just saw your cardiologist 2 days ago who said double up on that, right? So now you're taking 40, but the dose in the information at CVS hasn't changed.
Right.
Right? But right. You know it's changed.
Right.
And this is what Scott is saying. It's really know your current list. Like, what are you currently taking?
Mm-hmm.
Know it or know where to get that information.
So exactly.
Get that information updated. Because the medication reconciliation, Scott, I'm a little bit obsessed with medication reconciliations.
So am I. I don't have a choice. It's in my DNA right now.
Right. But in my book, I like even have that big form for people to practice filling out. And I talk about it a lot because I'm not a surgeon. I don't cut things open, but I prescribe medicines. This is how I treat patients. And that's a big safety thing. And maybe I'll invite you back and we'll just talk medication reconciliation. Because I dedicate, like,
yes.
I think it is the most important safety thing the public doesn't know about.
It is.
Right.
It is. And unfortunately, so having worked in the various spaces that I mentioned, from community pharmacy to my current role, is that people do not know their medications, what they are taking. I remember working in the community pharmacy space, also known as your CVS, your Walgreens, you know, your chain pharmacies or your independent community pharmacies, is oftentimes people will call or come to the pharmacy and describe the pill, you know, the small little white pill.
Oh, yeah.
And the green pill. And the thing is that colors of medications change based on the company who makes it, because of the research that they do. The research could be because of cost, right? It might be cheaper to do it a white color that has no coloring in it versus doing it with a yellow color that makes it more identifiable.
Oh, what you said earlier, something people want to, I never thought about that, but like how appealing something is
exactly
for someone to look at. Does the shape of a medicine mean anything?
No, the shape has nothing to do with the medication. It's
marketing.
It's marketing to, I mean, if all the drugs were round and white, it would make it very hard to identify them. But there are very few drugs that are like triangular. For example, Xarelto is a triangular looking medication. So as soon as I see a triangular drug, my first thought is going to be
Xarelto,
right?
Yeah.
Because most drugs are either circular or oblong shape, but not many of them are distinctive enough to be identifiable just by looking at them.
Yeah.
And some of the colors change because people have allergies to different colors. And so making it white is the most safe way to do it, right? Yeah. Without any coloring. So I come across that a lot, unfortunately. And one thing that my organization is very much involved with is advocacy. Advocate for yourself. The best way to advocate for yourself is to know what you are taking, how often you are taking it. So I myself go see a doctor, right? And when my provider changes my medication from taking it once a day to twice a day, mm-hmm. I let them know I need a new script for that says twice a day. Yes, I still have some of that medication left. I can take it twice a day, mm-hmm. but I need that to reflect at my pharmacy that I'm taking it twice a day so that in case anything ever happens and they need my medication information, that they'll be able to see that is the most current information. Not just that, but there's also an insurance component to it and stuff like that and et cetera. So that's the first thing that I would say is know your medication. You don't have to know how to pronounce it. Know what it's being used for. Know how often you take it. And know the milligrams, which is the strength of the medication, mm-hmm. whether it's grams or milligrams or micrograms, whatever the strength is. Know that. Yeah. Your current medication. If you have that, right? Because you might come to the hospital and what brought you to the hospital might not be due to a disease state. It might be due to prolonged administration of a medication mm-hmm. that causes a side effect or is masking a disease state over the long term. And that medication might need to be changed. So if you know your medication, mm-hmm. you know the strength, how often you're taking it, it might just mean that that medication is removed from your profile completely, or the dose needs to be reduced, mm-hmm. or the frequency needs to be reduced from taking it three times a day to once a day. So these things are very, 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 very important. If you don't know anything, know those. If you don't know anything, if you don't know anything about your family history,
know your medicine.
Or know your drug. I mean, you know when you're eating pizza, you know that you love pepperoni with some pineapples on top. You know what you like. You know what kind of ice cream that you like, right?
Know your medicine. You,
yes.
Know your medicine.
Love your medicine the way you love your food.
You can utilize apps. There's apps now, I know CVS has an app that will tell you all the medicine that they have from your physician. So you can keep your list there. Your physician's office may have an app. There's like My Chart apps for different, mm-hmm. Epic type of interfaces. And then if all fails, pen and paper have been helping humanity remember things.
I go to pen and paper first. One of the reasons why I say that is one advice that I give. Okay. So before I went to pharmacy school, my mother was taking a lot of these medications. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when people go to the pharmacy, pick up their medications, it comes with a lot of information, a bunch of papers and things like that, that has information about the drug, right? And all that the patient holds on to is the bottle. So keep your most recent bottle at home, even if it's empty, right, of the drug that you are taking. If you don't have that, hold on to the paper that has the name of the drug, the frequency on it, and put it in your drawer and hold on to that. Mm. Okay? So that way, even if you don't have it at the time you go to the hospital, at least maybe somebody you know that's in your family can go home and you can say, hey, it's in the second drawer in my bedroom or in the kitchen or in the medication cabinet. It has the list of all the drugs that I am currently taking. And if you have any notes that you could take on them, like change to twice a day versus three times a day, like take these little notes about your medication. The reason why I say this is because even though electronically we as pharmacists have access to your medications from your insurance company, for example, if you work at a hospital, a particular hospital may have a specific software that they have a contract with, and that contractor software has a contract with different insurance companies that list medications that you are taking. Some softwares can get access to all of the insurance companies, right? Mm-hmm. But what if there's no insurance company? What if you've been paying for this out of pocket all along? Mm-hmm. So it will never show on that list of medications that you take.
Yeah.
Right? Secondly, it's good to use one pharmacy or one pharmacy chain, for example, versus having several different pharmacies. Because if one pharmacy has the list of all of your drugs versus five different pharmacies that has two drugs here, three drugs there, this pharmacy has five drugs there, it's easier to keep track of medications that you are taking from one pharmacy, maybe two, right? Because pharmacies do run out of drugs, like we mentioned earlier. You know, Burger King ran out of burgers, right?
Yeah.
so you have to go shop elsewhere. But try to prevent using multiple pharmacies to pick up your medications, because that right there increases the risk of safety risk. Pharmacy is checking your medications, what you're on, what you're currently on, if there's any drug-drug interactions. Mm-hmm. They can't see what's in the other pharmacy's computer. They can only go with what they see now. So as far as giving you advice, what to do, what not to do, because the information is lacking, it'll be even more challenging for the pharmacist and for yourself, because you're not getting a full picture
of what's going on.
Of what's going on.
That's great.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Know your drug and know it very well. Don't depend on electronic data solely for your medication. Do the work yourself. That's where self-advocacy comes in, to know your medication and things like that. And second thing is, we mentioned it already, know your drug allergies, right?
Mm.
Because that goes into the type of therapy and the type of treatment that you get. I mean, even if the allergy is not drug related, right? Because you're not just in the hospital to take drugs. You're in the hospital for a full stay. So, which means that if you have food allergy, let us know about it. If there's certain types of products, I know some people have an adhesive allergy. Mention that these things are very, very important.
Very, very
important. And not just know that I have an allergy to this and that, but know what happened.
That's
when
right.
you have that allergy, and what to do to mitigate that allergy so that it goes away.
Really getting from you is to be safe and to advocate for yourself. You have to be knowledgeable about yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so exactly.
Information is safety.
It's exactly.
That's really big.
The more you know about yourself,
uh-huh.
the better it is for you, just in general, not just in medicine, but just in general.
Yeah, the more you know. It's true.
Yeah.
I feel like we should have that rainbow star thing.
Right. Exactly.
So,
you read my mind.
So this has been a ton of fun. And for our listeners, Scott is coming back for a second episode. He's going to talk to us about outpatient pharmacy and how he to really leverage that. And I think he's kind of gotten into that a little bit already, but I'm looking
my first
forward
love.
To that. The first love is a community.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
that's really what we're here for, is to help educate and care for the community. And so my question that I like to kind of end everything as a little bit fun question is, when you think about your role in healthcare and how it's depicted in media.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a show, a movie, a book that does justice to pharmacists in the world?
To pharmacists.
Or something that does not do justice to pharmacists in the world?
Okay, so there hasn't really been any movies in the world about pharmacy.
And this is when I told you I was going to ask you this, right?
Right.
And it's what you said in the beginning. You guys are the executive producers of healthcare. You're in the back. And because you're in the back, I don't think that a lot of people pick up in pop culture that a big part of safety, a big part of hospital, a big part of healthcare is pharmacists.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there hasn't been any movies or shows where the pharmacist is involved. There is a show, I don't remember the name of it. It was about a chain store, and
yes, the
pharmacist was there every now and then, you know, and stuff like that.
Cloud Nine.
Yes.
Cloud Nine.
Yes. And everything that pharmacist said is spot on. Okay, I'm not, I'm a pharmacist. I don't know about, things like that. But there is a pharmacy. It wasn't a show. It was more like a Netflix series called The Pharmacist.
Hmm.
And what that pharmacist did was, he worked for an independent pharmacy. And you've heard of the word pill mill, right?
Yeah.
So what that pharmacist was able to identify, he was able to identify several different pill mills in his communities. So for those who don't know, a pill mill is a provider who works in an office that takes, I wouldn't say patients, that people come into his facility and they make a request for a medication. Even though the indication for the medication is not there, such as a pain medication, it's usually pain meds, like oxycodone, morphine, and Percocet, and etc. Although the patient is not really in pain, they will provide a prescription to the patient to go pick up the medication. Okay. So the prescription is legitimate, but the indication is not, right? And so once that person, because that's not a patient, because there's no patient-doctor relationship there, it's mostly transactional.
Yeah.
And so that person would go to a pharmacy, pick up the medication. So the movie or the series, The Pharmacist, kind of goes deep into that, because that individual lost his child to overdose, and that's when he started noticing things around his community, and he got involved, got a lot of those places shut down, and
safety
and looking out
for the safety of community. Here's a pharmacist again,
exactly
making sure community is safety. Is that a documentary?
That's a documentary indeed.
I'm
yes.
gonna look it up. That's yes. really good.
So that movie, I mean that series, along with I'm going to age myself here. Scrubs and Star Trek, The Next Generation.
The Next Generation.
Yes. So the reason why I say that is because Scrubs, obviously, if anyone has ever watched the show Scrubs, it's about medical doctors and stuff like that, and residents and interns, medical interns. What it shows the fun side of being in medicine. It's not always about the show ER, where it's very intense and stuff like that. It shows the humanity of...
It's a great show.
...of your providers. Like, they like to laugh. They make stupid jokes. They make, you know, they like to go out, and they are very passionate about taking care of their patient. And I say Star Trek The Next Generation, specifically The Next Generation, is because I remember one of the things they said on that show was, you know, space is the final frontier. Well, with medicine changing consistently, I feel like medicine itself is a frontier, because new medications are coming out every time. Different disease states are being uncovered and being made aware to the public. And with these different disease states, then there has to be new medications to take care of that disease state, or the use of old medications for that disease state. So those are the shows that I would use to describe my field right now. It's because it's, you know, it's an evolving field.
I love it. And I'm going to look up The Pharmacist. I think that's really great. And, you know, he's that person, like you said, is looking out for the safety, just like pharmacists do every day, keeping patients safe. So Dr. Brizard, thank you so much for your time, for the real life examples. so we will always remember. And thank you ahead of time for coming back to talk to us about your first love, community-based pharmacies, and how patients and their family members can really maximize their impact from there. And thank you again for joining us today on Prescription for Admission, the podcast. You can always pick up the book on Amazon.com or anywhere that you buy books. It's same name, Prescription for Admission. I'm Dr. Monique Nugent, your host and your hospice, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Have a good night.